You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am one of the co-hosts of this wonderful show. And joining me for our weekly show, we are now 5 days a week for the next few weeks. In the last week or so, is Mr. Tony. Is Tony the Pacers? We stayed up for a second round pick. They had like they went from 1 to 2 to 5 to no picks taken in the second round.
Yes, it was disappointing. I especially feel bad for you people who listened to the last segment of our podcast, which was us like building up to hopefully they pick Talen, and then all of a sudden they don't pick anybody. Then I stayed up till pick 50 to do an extra segment, and then they traded that pick, and it all happened so fast.
Yeah, I woke up the next morning because I didn't stay up for 50. I texted you, did they not take a single play in second round? And you went, yep. Nope. I went, oh my effing God.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the more important thing is doing what's best for the team, but minor complaints on the podcasting front as Kevin Pritchard keeps us up late.
I think it is worth – that's kind of where we should start first is the 4 second round picks, because I think the moves made sense and it allows the Pacers to accumulate. What are the second round picks? I mean, they're not like valuable, but they're like – well, they're valuable, but they're not like – they're like silver coins, right? You just kind of throw them on top of something to get a deal done.
Yeah, exactly.
They help grease the wheels. Like,
well, okay. So here's how I will throw the addendum. Do you remember how the Bucks got Nikola Mirotic this past year?
I don't.
4 second round picks.
Okay.
Because they said we don't have a first. We can just throw. Here's every second we can give you. And the Pacers have more than the four. They have all their own except for that one going to Brooklyn. So they now can do that. Like Mirotić is good. Like they can get that level of player with these picks, and the three he ones could end up being pretty good. Like, did they get that much better than the lottery team they are right now? No. Like those could be solid second round picks.
So do the Heat have no picks now, like ever?
They have. I think they have one left.
Jesus. To do that for just some second round, you must really like whoever they took at 32.
Yeah, the Kaze Okpala was kind of mocked in the lottery for a while. That obviously didn't happen. He went 32, but
he's gonna become some superstar when we look back at him in the Pacer hat.
So they have confirmed that the Utah second is 2021. So they have 3 seconds in 2021 now, Utah, Milwaukee, and their own, but they have yet to figure out. I don't think anyone's figured out what the Heat ones are.
Okay. So here's the thing though, right? There's probably no combination of second round picks that gets you a first round pick in the top 25.
No.
Maybe if you have like a 32-30 picks, you can get into like the late 20s. That's about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're basically valuable in the sense that you can attach them to things for trade.
These picks are going to be ridiculously far away.
Yeah.
They've given up their 2020 second to the Kings. Their 2021 second goes to the Kings as well. Their 2023 second goes to Dallas. And their 2024 second is kind of funky protected, but it's going to either the Hawks or the Cavs. So they probably got 2022, 2025, and 2026, but TBD.
Yeah, well, the second-round picks, too, are basically it can be used to attach to a player to get them off. Like, if you want to send them to a team that is rebuilding, that could take on a salary, you could basically do that almost as a salary piece. Yeah. Or a lot of times they can be packaged, like you said, for a mere just for a guy who's on an expiring deal on a bad team that they're just kind of like – trying to get rid of him essentially at the deadline for some value. At least.
Exactly. So say they get to the trade deadline and some team who has had a worse season than they thought has an expiring contract, they might just be wanting anything. So you could just flip off even one or two of those seconds, still end up with positive value and get a guy. You know, they make a lot of help. They help you even if at the time it just feels like you're pushing back a shitty pick. They do help.
I want to say, I could be wrong, but I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, the Pacers traded for Leandro Barbosa. That was like 2 seconds or a second round pick to get him. It was just one of those guys. He was just kind of out there. He wasn't. He had some value, but he was older in age, and he was on a bad team and just wanted to get some value for him. So they traded him for a second round pick, and he became kind of a decent player in their playoff run. That was at 2012-13.
The Pacers traded for Leandro Barbosa. 2012 second round pick. Well done.
Yeah, so, I mean, I remember he was pretty valuable when they ended up taking the Heat to 7 that year. I mean, he just came off the bench, provided a spark. I mean, you would see it 2 years later when he helped the Warriors win the championship as a kind of a bench player as well. So, those are the kind of players that are available that, you know, we talk about it. You need probably 8 solid rotation guys to win the playoffs. Well, that's how you get that eighth guy if you only have seven going into this year. You know, at the deadline, a guy who probably will get bought out or whatever. Instead, you trade for him by giving the second round pick. I mean, that was like the Trevor Reza idea, right? Is you wouldn't give a first round pick for Reza, and he's probably going to get bought anyways. But if you could get him for, if you give up something to get him, you probably get a second round pick, kind of thing.
Exactly. So they're not valueless. And I know that, like, I don't want to feel like we're like hyping this up, but you know, getting 3 for 1, you know, the Heat really like Ogpala, and you feel like you don't like him at that point. Like, that makes
you
it
basically traded cash for 3 first round picks
and TJ Warren.
No, but like the cash part of the deal.
Right.
You essentially bought a pick to turn into 3 second round picks.
I like to view it as you sold your cap space for TJ Warren in 3 seconds.
That's fine. That works. I'm kind of taking the Warren deal as just a dump, and then the second round pick is kind of the extra on it. So then you trade. Okay. You pay for the pick essentially, and then you get Warren for free.
Yeah, I can dig that. I can't wait for someone to get the details of the amount of cash in that trade and the picks from the Heat.
That'll Tony's be bold prediction, it was between $1.8 and $3 million.
What a wide range.
What a wide range.
So the thesis of this discussion is root against the Heat until like 2030.
Yeah, well, and you said not hyping up. You know, I think there was a one point where like Boston had like probably like 60 second round picks. It felt like every time about how valuable they are, and like second round picks are not like valuable on draft night. They just aren't. They're just nice little things you can put into deals to kind of grease the wheels a little bit farther to kind of add the cherry on top and make something move along. And that's why they're valuable. And that's why if you don't love a guy at 32, it's worth doing for three of them, because then you can use the three for other things at times.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We should shift gears, go to the first round pick.
Yeah, they say maybe we should move to the more important part of draft night, the more stunning Goga part. And that is Goga. I'm going to be a Tadze.
Be Tadze.
Yeah, I'm going to mess that up. I'm just going to call him Goga.
We got Alize's name wrong last year so much that we have to make sure we're getting Goga Be Tadze right this year. So I think after marinating, most people are feeling a little rosier on the pick than they were at the time it happened.
Best player available. I still think that was fine. They did the best guy.
Exactly.
He was the highest guy on their board. They took him.
It's justified. Well, they're gonna say that no matter what. You know, that is what it is. Okay. But
yes, you're right.
Either way, like a lot of people had him high. Like I genuinely can't believe them. Like the Nuggets getting Bull Bull at 44 and then going, wait, I'm top 10. It's like you waited this long to trade for him.
No. Yeah.
It's like okay.
No, but like, Goga didn't fall for any kind of injury issues, kind of
exactly
stuff. Like Bol Bol's whole fall is related to what is knee. I'm assuming it's knee or foot. I'm
trying to remember which one. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember which.
So, yeah, it seems like it legit. He does seem like he's a good basketball player, and they, you know, they're ready to have him play this year, not even as a project guy.
That's what I like most about this. He's really ready to play, it adds a guy to the rotation, especially they're playing Sabonis at four. So now all of a sudden they've got. I was kind of rostered currently with Warren. They have basically four guys.
I wonder how much we can compare what we think his contributions will be to like Kyle O'Quinn. Like, can he be that kind of guy his rookie year? That's helpful.
Yeah, I mean, if he can beat Kyle O'Quinn with a jump shot this rookie year,
just like, yeah, he can shoot. That was like his thing. Every workout, I saw a video of him shooting threes from whatever team beat writer was in the room.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see him, and it's just because I just honestly just a bad comparison simply because it's just Eastern European guys, but he reminds me of Enes Kanter with a jump shot almost.
No, he's way better on D than Kanter.
Okay.
The vibe I get from people who have watched him, again, I still haven't done that, but
he just feels like he has that athletic kind of
like he's a decent pick and roll, like drop coverage defender, which Dan Burke has made Miles unbelievable at that. So, and Popeye, perhaps there's something there. To get with him, and you know, he's a better shooter than Kanter, but he's still a good post player on both ends. So I think you can groom him to be a wide variety of things, which is appealing as a draft pick, especially because if he does round out his game as well as everybody says, he'll be the best center of the three that they have.
Well, and I think it's worth noting, if you look at the if you take the Warriors out of it, the teams that are the NBA has had this shift where they've gone like everybody's got to be small, shoot threes and whatever. And there's been kind of this like centers is valueless. But if you take the Warriors out of that equation,
the Warriors broke the norm,
right? If you take the norm, like look at the Raptors, right? They were playing a lot of Ibaka and a lot of Gasol. Now both can stretch the floor 3-point shots, but Gasol is by no means some like crazy athletic big man that can do that.
That's an interesting thing that I've thought about. I'm just going to rant about this. It's not super Pacers related. It's like the Rockets are justifiably trying to deal Capella in their attempts to beat the Warriors, but like if the Warriors aren't shit next year with all these injuries, like, Capella helps you beat the other 28 teams. Like, I feel like he is a valuable guy to them.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is the Houston is what the reactionary to Golden State, right? Houston built their entire team to play Golden State. Like, the best person I heard was Kevin Clark on Twitter said, the Warriors are like if you're good at 2K, and the Raptors are like if you're playing two, like if I play 2K, like take a bunch of threes, hope they go in. The Warriors are actually good at doing that. Like, that's, but the rest of the NBA, traditional centers are basically, maybe not super, but like pseudo traditional centers in terms of guys who can kind of, who are big, not super like fast and speedy, but maybe stretch four a little bit, are the norm. Brooke Lopez's, the Gasols, guys like that. So it's, I mean, even I'm thinking the Lakers are probably going to bring some traditional big in.
I'll even drop traditional center and just say center. Like, Draymond's not a center. We know that now. But just a center. Like, I don't consider Brooke Lopez traditional or anything like
that. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess
or I call Marc Gasol even.
Yeah, but that's
I get new, what you're saying.
That's kind of the new norm for center. And if you don't think a guy like go like, compete with those guys, because like maybe that's why he fell, because he's not, he's a center and that has less value. But like, him going against Marc Gasol could be kind of a fair matchup, because like, I'm sure athletically they probably come out the same as younger, obviously.
Right. Yeah, the Raptors traded for Marc Gasol because they thought he could help them defend against Joel Embiid. Another good center. It's like,
also, yeah, a guy who's probably going to, I mean, if you look at the next wave too, I mean, what, Joel Embiid's probably, Jokic, the two, going to be two of the best.
Yeah.
Next best players, Giannis, does he play center? Kind of. I mean, that's kind of maybe like four. Fair. Like, those are kind of the next best players. If you just take the Warriors out of this team that is completely like shifted the NBA with two shooters who can shoot 40% from anywhere on the floor, it feels like most of the time, the go-up pick makes better sense in the long run, because in 3 or 4 years, it's probably going to be the NBA will come back to more of its traditional, where the big guys are sort of,
there's still a value in the center. However,
yeah. Or you still need a center and a point guard to be good. Like, that's
what you know what you don't need, perhaps, is two centers on the floor at the same time.
You want to take a
that
break?
That was a lazy segue. Oh, yeah. You want to do a break?
No, it was a great segue, because it was a tease. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about the two centers that are going to be playing on the court at the same time. All right, Tony. Kevin Pritchard basically all but said it. Sponis and Turner are going to play together.
We'll get to Thad later.
It's good to see that it's happening. I don't know if it's going to go well.
So I think I agree. That's the laziest answer of all time. So I was like doing research on them, trying to just get better numbers and a better grip of where they're at, where they are going forward. Their offensive rating together on the floor last year was like 106. That's like 25th in the league. That was a team that's bad. Their defensive rating was super good, which makes some sense, I guess. Turner being out there in general just means your defensive rating is good. So then I changed the filter to just have it against playoff teams. And it was still a positive, like a 108 offensive rating and a 106 defensive rating. So with just those numbers, you could say, okay, maybe this works and it's worth trying so we can keep two really good players. And even against the Celtics in the playoffs, that one was where it was a disaster. I just phrased that horribly. Then against the Celtics in the playoffs, that's when it was a disaster. And you have to think, okay, does this work in the regular season and not the playoffs? You know, what's the deal with this? Well, even in the regular season, it sucked against Boston. It was like a minus.
Haven't seen enough of it. Sorry.
I think you're right. I think there is enough evidence to say that exactly what you just said, basically. There's enough evidence to say that this could work, and if we see more of it, perhaps it could actually be something that gives us a competitive advantage against every team that doesn't have Al Horford kicking Sabonis' ass. And all credit to Al Horford, who's no longer going to be on the Celtics next year, it looks like that helps. If he goes to the Western Conference, like, sound the alarms. But I think you can, you know, as much as it looks ugly and doesn't make sense anecdotally with the way teams play, and I still think that there's probably better utilization of players and roster in terms of asset management, team control, you know, stuff like that, zigging while their guys zag, there's a lot of evidence, empirical evidence that says we should try this. This could work.
Yeah. So I think we should throw out anything that happened last year simply because they didn't play it consistently enough.
134 minutes isn't nothing.
No, but they didn't play it like every – like they weren't playing it 80 – how many games did that play? They
like
do that
5 minutes a game. It averages out to like 5 minutes a game. I don't remember exactly the number of
games. But it wasn't in like maybe 50 of the games. I mean,
I think it was higher than that. I'll look it up.
Okay.
Go ahead. Carry on.
They did not play consistently enough. They did not play it in big moments. They did. I mean, the 5 minutes was the 5 minutes.
It was a huge deal. Remember, they closed two games together, the Bulls and the Thunder. And both times we were like, oh my gosh, they're closing the game with the two centers.
No, but to make, because they're unnatural fits on paper, to make it work, they have to actually play like a lot of minutes together and understand each other's weaknesses and strengths so they can figure out how to play with each other. Like, you can't just learn that from playing 5 minutes and then for practice. You need to actually dedicate effort to it. But so it makes sense why they want to do this, because obviously they're two of their best, what, three players on the roster in terms of future. Like, they, you know,
they're probably two and three.
They're, yeah. I mean, they might be one and two, depending on, you know, really talking about like the future of the Pacers per se. The problem you're going to get in is if it succeeds, fantastic. But if it fails, you're going to lose your trade leverage when you trade one of the guys. Yeah. That's going to be the biggest problem. Is next summer, if they want to trade one of them, they're going to lose all leverage. Team are going to see it didn't work and say, well, you have to trade the guy. What are you going to do? So they might get, you know, some bonus for 86 in the dollar or whatever. But I worry, and I told you this over text, was I just don't think McMillan is creative enough on offense to be able to make these two guys work. Because there is a way where they both have really unique skills offensively that they could kind of figure out how to use. They could run a lot of like double screen and stuff like that to get guys open, and they can use both his passing and use Turner's ability to stretch and really, but not just like hide Turner in the corner and use his ability to kind of move off the ball in a way, because he can't
do that at times. I think he in the corner more when they're on the floor together.
No, but Turner has also this ability where if you get him the ball in stride and he can kind of make a move around a guy. Like, we've seen it. You know what I mean? Those long strides kind of getting around a dude. They just it's going to take a real effort to like coach, I guess, or dedicate where they're going in a way. And I don't know if McMillan can do that. He's not a good offensive coach, in my opinion.
After 10 years of searching like a doofus for these two-man lineups, 64 games was the number.
Okay, so that, I mean, that's still not, I mean, you look at the instances where they're played, I bet most were between first, second quarters, right? That's where most of the minutes came from.
Yeah, the end of the first, end of the third kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't enough of a sample size and big enough moments against, right? I don't know,
that's the best argument, is the clutch moments.
It's not even clutch, it's like playing the first 8 minutes of a game against the starters kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's when you see if it has value. If you're playing against bench guys, you can get away with a lot of things when you're playing against bench units of a lot of bad teams. You can get away playing. You could probably get away playing Fad Sabonis and turn on the court at times if you really needed to in certain
vibes. Okay. So if you want to hear it from someone who completely knows better than us, Caitlin wrote about like all the stuff that they could do to maximize this and all the problems. And, you know, she says it's about spatial awareness. You know, they have to know where they are in relation to each other, always making sure they're far apart, and like, there's a great clip she tweeted of against the Nuggets. There's like 10 seconds left on the, or like 8 seconds left on the shot clock, and Sabonis runs a pick and roll. And right then, Turner flashes in the post. So when Sabonis gets the ball rolling, there's just a teammate right in his way. It's like, no, you got to have him clear out. These guys have to know where the other guy are. And, you know, that is on the, like you've said, McMillan and the coaching staff to figure out a way to make them know where to be in relation to the other one if they're going to make this work. Does more reps help? I don't know, because last summer they talked about the same thing, how they think they can work together. We'll see, but it does sound like they're going to be playing a lot more, both starting. So that's
To me too. Turner often is a player who I feel like, I don't call it lazy, but kind of settles back into like almost like subconsciously how he plays. And you put him next to a guy like Sabonis, he's got to kind of like keep thinking constantly when he's out in the court. And I don't know if he's that great at that.
I think that Turner should be in the corner more, because he's a good shooter, and it would open up space for the pick and roll.
Isn't he a bad corner three shooter? Isn't there like some weird stats where he's just like
He only took like 20 the whole last season.
Okay, I just remember there was one year that's where he probably airballed at least like three times from the corner.
I don't remember that specifically, but I don't not believe you.
Yeah, I will say defensively, I think it can work, especially with Turner's ability to guard in space. Now I think it can work. You have to just, if teams start running the pick and roll nonstop, you might have to switch one of the guys out or whatever. But the way this works is if you just destroy them offensively, you force teams to adjust to you. And that's how you have to do, that's the only way you're going to win these games. If you make team adjust to your size, not the other way around.
Yes, I agree. Sorry. I have decided that now is the perfect time to figure out the corner threes.
I get
15.
Okay.
Corner threes this past season and hit 60% of them.
Okay.
Which is nine.
Okay.
On his career, he's 36% from the corners. However, we both know he's become a better shooter since his rookie year.
Yeah.
So I think he's probably like a little bit above league average corner 3-point shooter. I can go with that.
Yeah. And the corners, you should be more like 40, right? Because the corners.
You would like it to be higher, yes.
Just, I mean, because in general, like you could be 33 from the top of the key.
If you can give me a 38% 3-point shot every possession, do it. Done. Sold. Take it.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's where we don't know if Sabonis is going to develop some kind of jump shot. Is he going to shoot threes this year? We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It did not work well for him in Oklahoma City.
No, but he's also a different player, obviously, than he was then. I mean, he made like a nice percentage of threes last year, right? What's the 3-point percentage from last year?
He made like 9 out of 15 or something stupid.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I mean, like he has like a clean jump shot. I mean, he can make 15.
It takes him like an hour to shoot it.
Yeah, but that's not. But he's gonna play the spot where I mean,
9 out of 17. I got the 9 right.
It takes Marc Gasol 10 hours to shoot a 3-2. It's not if small. It's not about being.
Yeah, like, I don't think Marc Gasol is a good 3-point shooter.
No, but it's not about being a great 3-point shooter. It's just about keeping teams honest, right?
No one's gonna guard you out there anyway if you're only taking.
Yeah, but with the bonus is passing, it's probably okay. Well, it's the Jokic thing, right? Teams don't even guard out 3-point line, but that space lets him to pass the ball really well and kind of.
He got to Jokic level passing, we'd be having a different conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard. I don't know. I think there's a way offensively you can make it work with offensive rebounding too, having both of them out there just to be able to do that.
That, right? I agree with.
There's just some little things you can do now. But my biggest worry, honestly, is they're going to have to sign some – we'll do this on Tuesday's podcast. They'll have to sign some power forward because they can't play one of those two guys with Goga too. That's going to screw everything up.
I don't know that they have to sign a power forward. I think they have forwards on the roster.
Yeah, but imagine defensively how bad the bench is going to be.
Do you feel the ripple, Adam? Did you feel that?
No.
The immediate ripple effect that hit Thaddeus Young?
Yes.
Well, now the second Kevin Pritchard said that on the radio, we should have known right then that is probably gone. And even if we didn't hear Kevin Pritchard on the radio, Jay Michael is basically reporting, I don't have his exact words in front of me, something to the effect of he's told that Thad is not a priority to bring back, and Woj said that they would only like to bring him back at the right price, which is just like team speak for only for getting him at a great deal. Like all the signs point to Thad not coming back. And this is like the nail in the coffin to me.
Yeah. I will love on June 30th at 6:01 when they re-signed Thad. just waiting for it.
I don't know.
No, I understand.
The other thing KP said in the presser about that is he said, yeah, we'll have conversations with Thad, but he's an unrestricted free agent. He can make his own decision on his next team. I was like,
Well, to me, it makes sense, right? They clearly want more offense out of the four. I mean, and that's a really fair point because it's been a glaring spot the past years. Especially I think when they traded for Thad, they thought he was going to provide offense because he's averaging, 17 points a game in Brooklyn or whatever. So I know that doesn't really matter. They thought there'd be more offense out of that. Now, you know, he's had such a streaky kind of 3-point kind of career at the Pacers where some points he's like the worst 3-point shooter on the planet. Other times he's hitting them at like 40% clip, but it makes sense. But when you look at what is available to replace him, it then starts to not make sense.
I don't know why they're going to replace him. It's a Sabonis. It's his replacement.
Well, no, but I mean the value you can get with that, whatever he's going to cost, the extra $10 million, I guess. Maybe not necessarily replace him, but the extra $10 million in value you can get is not any. I don't know. There's any that many players out there that can get for his salary that are going to be better than him per se next year.
But they might have more utility to the team for that money.
I mean, we should not do this now because we're going to do a podcast on free agency. So we should hold it back for that.
I think that is almost certainly gone now.
I agree with you.
Is the takeaway here?
It's disappointing, but it's not completely un.
Especially given how long the whole player option thing took last summer. I mean, the writing's kind of been on the wall since the end of the season last year.
Well, I mean, I think you expect it also to get older, his defense to fall, and that's really the reason you keep him is his defense. But if he's going to – with 32 next year, you just expect it. Now,
just turned 31 2 days ago.
Okay, right. He's born in 88. I always give him an extra year. He's born in 88. But, like – you know, a guy like that, it feels like he might be the same player the next 3 years still, which also, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's a risk, I guess, the right way to put it, right? Because he's not somebody who is like kills you with speed. And you have to think, because he's just been in the league so long, he's going to be able to keep his body up, stuff like that. Like, barring some injury, he might be able to be kind of the same level defender the next 2 years at least. But you got to, it's kind of a risk, I guess.
It is.
And they, maybe they want to go younger. I mean, the Pacers might kind of see themselves, they get younger as an opportunity to, I don't know what, it just helps the overall, maybe build some things in the next couple of years kind of thing. You go, like, you know, how old's Warren? 25?
25.
Right. So you get another guy around that age, and you've got kind of, even Oladipo leaves per se, you have kind of, you'll have a core of young guys. Like, that's why Russell kind of makes sense, right? Because Russell kind of fits in that young core mindset. But
yep.
So, I mean, you know, I understand why they want to get rid of him. I'm not necessarily like dying for that to be back, but I thought the right price, it would be valuable to bring him back.
Hey, that's what they said.
Yeah. Where do you think he goes? Just real quick.
Where do I think he ends up?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's hard. There's not a super awesome fit for him that I have found.
Does he get some of that $30 million in LA?
I think my favorite is Washington. They need a power forward pretty bad, but I do not want him to end up there, selfishly.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard to find.
New Orleans might be a good fit for him.
I agree.
I definitely agree. He's from the
South. That'd be a good guy to teach Zion some defense.
He's from the South too. He's a Memphis guy. That's kind of standing in
the hometown. He went to high school in New Orleans, if I'm correct. Maybe I have it backwards.
No, he went to college at Georgia Tech, so you're probably right. I think he was born in Memphis, and then
he has some young connections to Memphis and New Orleans. I think there are a couple teams that he makes some sense on.
Yeah. We'll see. Should we take a break and then talk about Oladipo? Real quick.
Oladipo, and I also want to fit in Adam if we can. With Young's departure, we have a pretty good idea of the forward rotation being crowded. I want to talk about
that. Yeah, so let's do that. Take a break and do rotations and then do the Oladipo news. So, Tony, you want to do rotations first or Oladipo news real quick?
Let's do the rotation just to keep the forward train rolling.
All right. So,
show how this persists. So,
I have your rotations up since you gave them to me, so you can just go
ahead. Yeah, it's in front of me, too. So, I texted Adam, first of all, let me say this. I texted Adam a fake rotation, trying to get all the minutes for these forwards and centers. Completely forgot about McDermott.
So yeah, shocker that Tony forgot McDermott.
I put Leaf in and forgot about McDermott. So I had to make a second one. So I'm going to read it, and I want you, the listener, to tweet at me and Adam and tell us where you think we went wrong in this exercise. Okay. At the point guard spot, I have a parenthetical that just says free agent point guard, 28 minutes, and then a slash, and then Aaron Holiday the backup the other 20 minutes. I think that one's pretty easy, right?
Yeah, I could see that being even, depending on who the point guard is and depending on how Holiday plays. Now, you could see Holiday playing some of the two, so that's a whole other question.
I can live with that being even. It was pretty close to even last year.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Okay. The shooting guard spot, I currently have Vic's eventual backup at 30 minutes and then Sumner at 18 minutes. And then when Vic does come back, which we'll talk about, Vic will be the 30-minute guy, maybe even a little less load management and such. And then the guy who his backup is gets reduced to the Sumner slot of 18. I also think that one's pretty easy.
So we do this again. We'll do free agency on Tuesday's show. But yeah. Is that eventual backup the guy you think gets slotted into like the 4.9 rim reception, whatever guard they sign?
Yeah, that's possible.
So Lance Stevenson, okay.
No, I think they're going to spend more money on that, whoever that is.
Okay. Again, Tuesday, we'll talk about that.
Here's an easy one, Wesley Matthews.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay, the small forward spot's where it gets a little dicey because you have now, I had assumed in this exercise, perhaps this could be where I'm shooting myself in the foot. So we might have an indicator with Warren and doing this exercise as a challenge that Bogey might not be retained, although they have made a million indications that they would like to keep him. I currently have it as Bojan at 32 minutes. That's his entire minutes on the floor. TJ Warren at 10 minutes and McDermott at 6 minutes. And that was kind of hard to do because – Are they even going to try to get McDermott minutes? Is Warren going to play all his minutes at the three? These are answers I don't know. And if they go with all Warren at the three, now your four rotation has to include someone else because Sabonis has – there's a lot of moving parts that made me decide to go with three guys there.
Okay. So this is why I think they're going to sign some backup four eventually. So that Bogey will –
They already have Leaf.
Okay. Thanks, Tony.
Well, you know, I mean that though. Because if they're, you know, I have currently at the four, I'll just get to that. I have Sabonis at 22 minutes and the rest of his minutes are at center. And then TJ Warren at 16 and McDermott at 8. Because I just feel like, you know, when Sabonis is out, I mean, do they really want Leaf out there when they have Warren and McDermott who need minutes and those guys can play the four fine? In fact, they're probably both better on defense playing the four.
Yeah. I mean, I still think the second round picks they accumulated is the perfect thing for McDermott trade at some point.
to be flipped McDermott off McDermott to my assignment guy. That's certainly possible.
That's because they've got enough at the small.
Maybe they could get their stretch four to back up Sabonis or something like that.
Right. I mean, to me, it always makes sense to dump McDermott to then get enough money to sign Thad and Bojan back. But that's just me. And Rubio, you do that all kind of in the same move. But
yeah, just center's easy, assuming Sabonis is starting. Miles at 28 minutes, Sabonis at 10, and Goga at 10.
My only thing here is I think you have Sabonis playing 32 minutes and Turner playing 28. Sabonis has never played more than 24 minutes a game. I think you might be looking at maybe Turner playing 32 at center and Sabonis playing more like 26 at his.
I think when they talked about significantly expanding Sabonis' role, I think that it's more than 2 minutes a game.
No, but I don't think he's going to – I think he's going to play 28 is what I'm thinking at right now, not 32. Okay.
Then I can up Goga's minutes and drop Sabonis a few at center.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking maybe Turner plays 30 at center because, I mean, it depends how.
Yeah, you're trouble. Right. I think you're right.
And Sabonis plays maybe 24 at power forward and about 8 at – or maybe 6. That's a – you know what I mean? Maybe, you know, I think 32 is a little high. I forgot to go from 24 to 32, but who knows? I mean, we said a foul trouble.
Yeah, McGee down to 6 and Sabonis up to 24 at the power forward.
Yeah, and then you could cut McDermott's minutes two more because I think McDermott's going to slowly lose his
spot. Then at the center now, I've got Miles at 30. Goga's the second guy. No. Sabonis is at 10, and then Goga's the last guy at 8. Okay. Yeah,
that seems fair.
Here is the shakeout. The team leader in minutes will be Bojan at 32, same as last year. The second on the team – wait, I screwed something up. Sabonis has more minutes now than he did before.
Just take
How many minutes did you want him to have in total? Like 20 –
I was thinking 30. So you give Sabonis 20.
6 minutes at center.
Okay. Yeah, Goga's more at center, I think, to be honest.
Goga's getting 12. Sabonis gets 6. Okay. So now I have it correct. Bogey gets 32 minutes. That leads the team. The next three guys are Sabonis, Miles, and whoever, eventually Vic, but is currently his backup at 30. Then 28 for whoever they sign to start at point guard. Then TJ Warren gets 26. Aaron Holiday gets 20. Sumner and whoever Vic's backup eventually gets 18. And McDermott and Goga get 12.
Okay. I mean, I'm fine with it. The thing I'm going to be worried about is if Goga turns out to be a really good player, they're going to have to trade somebody to trade deadline.
That's also 11 guys, which is a lot to fit in.
Well, right. I mean, really, it's one.
It's 10. It's 10. I'm stupid.
Yeah, it's 10 guys, isn't it? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
That's 10. They did 10 last year a lot.
Wait, it's 9 guys, right? 1 point guard, Holiday, Vic, Sumner, Bogey, Warren, McDermott, Sabonis. Okay, you're right.
It's 10.
Well, that's because Goga is considered to be a day one rotation guy only.
That's already 10. TJ Leaf getting a little bit of a raw deal here, which could add to the fire of McDermott being moved.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes the most sense, doesn't it? Does it?
If they value Leafs development over McDermott,
well, just because isn't McDermott's money? Aren't you better off going after a four than a guy that's kind of a three?
Perhaps.
Like you have enough minutes at three if you have Bogey and Warren.
I think we'll find out if they like. We can talk about this another time. Declining the fourth year option on Leaf, I think, will be very telling on what they want to do with him in the rotation this coming year.
Or they put Leaf in a package with McDermott in a second round.
That's certainly possible.
Send them all somewhere. And that clears, what, 10 million space?
Almost. What's up, Atlanta? What are you guys doing?
Well, that clears almost 10 million. And that's 10 million for a player. I mean, that's a Rubio, Ricky Rubio salary.
No, Rubio's getting more than 10 million.
Okay, but that's like two-thirds of Rubio's salary.
Yes.
That's two-thirds, but Bogey's salary, hopefully.
Save your free agency numbers, Adam.
Okay, sorry.
the last thing I wanted to do is kind of shorter, but still somber. Adam, I kind of talked about this by myself last week when Woj reported it.
Yeah, well, this is more.
This is way more confirmatory, though.
That they said December, January, right?
Yeah, Kevin Pritchard saying December, January for Vic is the target return date, which would make it about a 12-month injury.
So are we thinking December 1, right?
That would mean he'd only miss like 15 games.
Hold on. So let's see. I'm going to do the math quick on how many games there were. So between the start of the year and December 1 last year, there were 22 games. If he misses games all the way to January, one would be 35 games. And if he misses all of January, per se, it's going to be 49 games.
I think in my head, when I estimate the number of games the team will win next year, which is way off, from now. I think I'll estimate he plays about 50 games.
Well, also have to see what the West
even when, well, maybe 41 or 45, because even when he comes back, they're going to hold him out, and dude, they're definitely going to investigate. Where did I hear this? I heard they're going to investigate load management more next year, but I can't remember where, so I wasn't going to talk about it on this show, but I definitely heard that, and I can't remember where.
Probably from somebody in one of your group chats.
If I'd have been on this Pritchard thing.
Okay.
On AMV.
I mean, we'll see, first of all, when their first West Coast road trip is, and if it's not till mid-December, they might be that might affect how many they get with how many home games they have to start, who they play. I mean, that will affect the start of the year. Okay, this is just because I thought of right now, what seed are they next year in the playoffs, if you had to guess? Just
right now?
With something
come back, that changes my answer substantially.
Everything you know is current, so you have to make a decision based on play right now. So do you think Kawhi's coming back? You just factor it all
probably in. Five again.
Philadelphia's better than them next year. Milwaukee's better than them next year. Yeah, is Boston better than next year?
Yeah, right five now. Or six. If Boston's better than them, then they're six. I said the same in my head. I said the same four plus Brooklyn.
Oh, I guess I make it. Kyrie goes there.
The Kyrie, bro. There were only one spot behind him. And Detroit was low key good when all three of Blake, Drummond, and Reggie Jackson were healthy.
Yeah, that's not happening again.
I was going to say, that's not, I mean, like 5% chance that happens the whole season. Detroit might be as
good. I mean, I got a better of getting struck by lightning right now. That has happened next season. And that's pretty low. It stopped raining here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be uphill sledding. Boston, Philly, and or not Boston. I'm an idiot.
See, the question is Boston better than them?
I don't know. It depends how their free agency goes. Like if they get Vucevic and a point guard, yeah, that'd be pretty good.
And Toronto, I don't know if Toronto's better than them too. It just depends how much if Kyle Lowry continues to be at the level.
If Kawhi leaves, they're just like meh.
Yeah, but their Pascal Siakam's still pretty good.
That's true.
Siakam goes per level. Lowry stays the same. That's still a good team. Good coach.
That's true. They're pretty good.
Yeah, so
Philly's going to be absurdly good next year, I think.
Yeah, I think Philly will be the one or two seed. Milwaukee, Philly will be 1-2 next year.
I think you are correct. All right. That was a lot of stuff to talk about. Coming from one interview and one draft pick. We could talk for almost an hour.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, guys, it's happening. The draft is over. We have a better layout of the team. It's time to get serious about this free agency talk. We're going to do it.
Yes, it is time, Tony.
Be ready for that. We're probably gonna do two free agency shows this week. Probably one with like realistic targets and one with like under the radar guys or something. We'll figure more of that out later.
Yeah, to me, we're doing two primers, one Tuesday, one Friday. And really Friday's gonna, I don't know if we'll get information in the next 3 days. We might get some more rumors. So just cause it just basically give us more as we get to the Sunday time.
The other two shows this week, since we're doing this now, Wednesday, hoping to have Locked On Suns host come talk about TJ Warren, get a better feel for what he can add to this team and maybe why they just wanted to salary dump him. And then Thursday, from me, you'll get a little bit of Cap 101. Someone on Twitter, James, asked me to do that so we can get a better understanding of what all these terms mean that are coming up. And we'll talk about, I don't even know if we've said this once on the show, they signed Brian Bowen to a two-way contract. I think we did talk about it. So we'll get a little bit on Brian Bowen's game, which will be fun.
Yeah, that's not. And then on Sunday, we are going to record
a free agency.
So we're going to start recording at 5:55 Eastern time or something like that. We'll see what happens. Last year, they signed McDermott in like the first minute of free agency.
It's like the third signing Woj said.
If there's no information or news, we might have to try about, but we'll do that podcast, kind of the draft one. We'll do it. In time, we'll post it that night. That'll be kind of our Sunday evening, Monday show, and then we'll have to step the rest of the week as more news comes in because they'll have to sign at least a new point guard, a power forward, a small forward, and a rim section guy. So there'll be four moves at least this offseason for the Pacers.
Yeah.
And that's if they don't trade McDermott too. So that could be five.
Thank you guys for tuning in today, and we'll see you tomorrow for the fun free agency.